Please see it. And the whole, other issue is, you know, we need to go through the course.
It is 6:02 on Wednesday, July 9th, and this is a regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting. In attendance are John Valenti, Hugh Howard, Alan Bice, Matt Jewison, and Kyson Spinlove. And Richard Howard is here as an alternate tonight. Could I have a volunteer to give us an invocation and lead us in the pledge?
I can do it.
Thank you.
Our dear, kind, and gracious Heavenly Father, we are thankful to be able to be here together and pray that as we go over the things and matters of the city, we may be able to have that guidance and be able to work in the best interests of the city and the residents here. And we pray that Thou would bless our land with the water and the rain that we need and to fill our reservoirs and to water our crops. And we are grateful for all these things. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Ready, Ian. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number 2, approval of tonight's agenda.
I move that we approve tonight's agenda.
I'll second that.
Motion by Hugh, second by John. All in favor?
Aye.
Item number 3, approval of the minutes for the June 11th, 2025 regular meeting, July 17th special meeting. Seemed like there was one more.
June 11th.
Motion to approve.
The June 11th work meeting. I'll motion to approve the minutes.
Okay.
Motion by Matt, second by John. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Reports, Patty?
Yes, thank you. The City Council met on June 18th. The business items were reviewing the county advisory boards and the planning commission's recommendations for interstate rock and potash applications for SIMPA. We set a public hearing for July 16th for that. And then we also approved, as we have in years past, a resolution restricting the use of fireworks. And basically, they're allowed on city streets in one park and in Vintage Park, and then there are setbacks for many hills when there's a time of day, evening, and typically the day before, the day of, and the day after for fireworks on July 4th and New Year's. We also certified the new tax rate. It went down slightly, and we did approve a contract with Deckard Technologies. And that's the company who is going to be keeping track of Airbnbs, or I should say short-term rentals in town, any of them that are advertised in any manner. And they'll, the first thing they'll do is ascertain who's legal, who isn't, and then they'll start tracking them accordingly and making measures to all those that are illegal, kind of send notices, let them know that they're in default. That action will take place after that. So that should start. We approved this on June 18th, so I think maybe about July 18th it should take effect, and we should start getting reports on that. And that's all for the City Council meeting on June 18th.
Thank you. Director of Operations, Derek.
I was hoping to have tonight, I think I talked about in the past, is if you go on our website and you look up the zoning map, it's just that nice colored picture, and that's all it has. It's not interactive or anything else. So we have been working on getting one that's interactive, and it was done, and I mistakenly erased where I could get into it, the web point on it. So I was going to show you tonight. So what it is now, we're going to have that on our web page, is that if you want to go into it, you'll be able to open it up. It will show all the colors of the zoned areas. You can go on any particular zone or house or whatever you want, click on it. Then it will tell you what zone it's in, and then it will have a spot that you can click on and take you right to the code. So it will tell you everything that's permitted and allowed in that code. So the hope is that we can get citizens trained that they can go on and do this and find out their own answers, and hopefully minimize the time the staff is answering questions that would be readily available to them. You can also go in there and they'll have key points of other information that's available. I can't remember it all. But next meeting that we have, which we won't be having the 24th or the 23rd, is that right? 23rd. Meeting due to the candidates night, that night. So we'll pick up with ours the first one in August. So that's been a big positive thing that we've been doing. I didn't have a chance because of all the issues that we're having with our next week's meeting on SIPA. Tied up a lot of staff. But I did want to show you the map, which I'll send out in the packet the next time. They're 30% done on the design for the pond up in Interstate Rocks property. So we do have an actual location, and the design has it's being structured from Ash Creek's treatment facility to the pond, and from the pond to 500 North over by the LDS Church House, because that's where we have our separate line of irrigation that runs along 100 East. The district has theirs runs down Main Street, and then they combine on this side of Main Street, and then they are shared the rest of the way down into Cottonwood Hollow and then into Trail Ridge and all those other places, wherever they have it going. So when I say that they're going to construct from the pond to that part of 500 North, is that they're going to separate the line, so that we have two different functioning lines. And the purpose in doing that is that we will be using a part of the Virgin River water to fill the pond until Ash Creek is fully functioning and starting to go through their waste management reuse part of it. So we'll be limited in that right off the bat. So we'll be compensating with the Virgin River water to the point that at one point we will be sending everything down to the Conservancy District, down to the Sand Hollow or Quail Lake, wherever they can be treated and sent back. We are working through an agreement, and when it gets finalized, I'll bring it before you and just kind of inform you. But the agreement for that is that the district is going to fund us between $13 and $16 million to bring everybody's irrigation out of the backyard, all the irrigation systems out of the backyard and into the road. And because we feel that we're losing about 400 or 500 acre feet a year, just through all the leaks and stuff on our system, which would be more water that they'd be able to use in their treatment facility. In exchange for the money, we will be over a certain amount of time to whatever that time that we'll agreed upon, we will pay them back with water. So we'll say, okay, you can take this water, say take this water, this amount for 30 years, and then that's our payment back for the $13 or $16 million. And then at what point, when we expand and our growth has exceeded our springs, we will be under contract. They will set a block of water aside for us that we will be able to buy back from the district once it's been treated. So we'll pay the rate for what it takes for them to pipe it, store it, treat it, and well it back to the city. So with that, we'll have a block. I don't know how big the block is. I don't think that's been figured out yet. Do you remember from that meeting if that had been? Something that's been talked about. So anyway, so it's kind of a really good thing for the city. So we're going to get reuse water and street cleaner. We'll be able to potentially run for a year round with the system being put in the right way. We may pick to keep the water out of the system in December and January, but you know, you have it clear until the 1st of December and you bring it back on the 1st of May. But then the rest of the water would go down. So it's not like we're giving the water. We're actually letting them take the water, store it, and then we'll have a block of connections that will be assured to us at the point in time that our resource is used up. And so it's all around a good, you know, we feel it's a good deal because we're not having to finance it. You know, it won't be money coming out of our coffers. And we're just working with our water attorney and the district, and the district has a water attorney, and getting through the logistics of everything is interesting. So at least the time is fast coming that we've got to get something done because they want to be under construction at the very first of the winter. And we want to run both projects at the same time because the hope is that we'll get a better price running two projects because it's a larger project and we won't have to pay for additional mobilization, additional advertising, things like that. The city will kind of be in a turmoil state as far as a lot of things will be tore up, but the end result will benefit the city for a long, long time to come and ensure that we get our growth, is what that we've been worried about with the growth of Hurricane and St. George and Washington. So with our 99 agreement and the new block coming on, we pretty much will have enough water that it could take care of the growth needs on the top side. So we feel confident that we could take care of the growth needs down here under our existing water rights, pending that the water stays there, doesn't decrease due to the drought and stuff like that. So anyway, I thought that was a good deal. But I'll bring you a map so you can see it's pretty fun to start seeing. And it's a pretty big deal. You know, you're probably talking a $30 or $40 million project by the time you take both of them together. And then Interstate Rocks allowing us to, the district will be purchasing the property, but it takes a lot of flat area than Interstate Rock would have had the ability to build on. I think that we'll probably be looking for our hillside ordinance to allow them to have an exception to make up for some of that property loss that's being used by the district. So that, you know, the thing is that it's kind of going to be, I refer to it as kind of a miniature Grandpa's Pond. There's going to be some parking up there. There's going to be some railing. There's going to be some things. There won't be fish or anything, but the maintenance of that pond will actually be done by, it will be the Conservative District's property and their responsibility to maintain it. Our responsibility won't come until we get to the pump house. It will pump it to the city and then meter it going our direction. So a lot of working parts there. Beyond that, hot springs opened up on the 3rd. Unfortunately, the two pumps are pumping the water, hot springs water up, seized up. So they're not, they're open, but they only are open to their swimming pool, their cold dip pools, and then what are the pools that are on the adult side, like the Mediterranean?
The World Springs.
Yeah, the World Springs. And because of that, they're not serving out the alcohol or the beer or alcohol or anything like that. It's open both ways to try to mitigate the fact that they can't get spring water. Right now, they're not assuming that that might be another 2 to 3 weeks out before they get that problem fixed. So another thing. But anyway, that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Item number F, business. One, discussion regarding application for live-work zone to be created in the existing commercial retail zone. Brad, do you want to take a little bit of time and tell us what you've done?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you recall, here a few weeks ago, and prior to that, about a month ago, I think we got together and talked about live work and also the mixed use. And what the decision was at that time was to split them in half. So we now have an actual official live work zone and an actual official mixed use zone. In regard to the live work zone, what I've done is go ahead and define what live work development is, and those are basically for sale units. We can talk about that a little bit later as we go through it. The big issue with this one that I had was, how do I capture something like what Blair was saying, that he has the use as a sleeping bag manufacturer? And I don't know how to do that. I can't think that far ahead or that far out to figure out, you know, all these different uses. So I was kind of turning around a little bit and said, okay, what are the uses that would not be appropriate in this zone? And that's what I've kind of done in the zone, if you can see. What I did is I went through your commercial zone and just kind of pulled out those types of things I didn't think would work here very well. I put those in as prohibited uses. Now, what that did was it's going to require you, the planning commission, to do what I've defined as like similar use finding. For any good use that comes in, we'll probably go through their HOA process first for their approval, then we'll come to the planning commission. The planning commission will have that ability to say, yeah, that's a good use in the zone. So that's kind of like backwards for most zones, but I just don't know how to wrap your hands around something that you can come up with. Someone could walk whatever short and say, I want to do this or that. It may make sense, but I just don't know how to do it other than to go for something like this. Now, in regard to a few other things we talked about, there was this issue about outdoor storage on balconies, so I went ahead and prohibited that in the regulations. And then also you talked about having a balcony enclosed with a stall material wall, which I put in these regulations here. There's also some stuff in regard to parking. There needs to be so many parking stalls, there needs to be loading spaces, those type of things, which are fairly standard type requirements. And then also a development agreement would be required. So just a real brief. That's my presentation for you. I'd like to get your feedback as to what you think at this point.
Thank you. I have some.
Okay.
If you'd be more comfortable not standing there, we could probably discuss from sitting, or you're welcome to stand there if you'd like. Would someone else like to start? Do you have comments, or shall I launch in? Okay. On page 1, section 1.1, item number A says a maximum of one employee other than the owner is permitted to work at the live-work unit. That seems restrictive. I was thinking of the sleeping bag manufacturer. It seems like if we're limiting their work capacity to two people, we're going to exclude things that we might not choose to exclude.
My thought with that is that try this one. It's kind of red light on. There we go. My thought with that is that you have limited amount of parking. You've got two stalls. I just talked about Blair's project. Particular, a new project could do something different. But you've got two enclosed parking spaces, and
garage, you have two outside, and then you've got one shared parking, I guess, parking. So I just don't know if you had like four employees or something. I don't know where they would all park in that type of facility. So that was my thought for that.
Could you come about that through a number of employees through parking? Kind of come back in a different route based on how much parking you have, is how many employees you could have.
I
don't know if that's a better way to do it than this, but
I don't know how you, I was thinking about that way too. I was like, how do you, because the majority of the time, if it's like their project, they don't know how many employees are going to be in that facility until they purchase the project and this parking stall is already in place. So I was trying to figure out how to come up with. Because I agree, I think it's restrictive on who can go there, but I don't.
You also have things like ride sharing and stuff like that. I mean, it might alleviate some of that.
And if this is a work hub, they may well have employees associated with the business, but not on the site all the time.
Yeah, I have a few suggestions.
Please.
Ideas.
Please.
Let me come up.
Sure.
Perfect. So, first and foremost, thank you. I read through it. It looked great on so many accounts. This one in particular, I think you're right in your thinking in limiting the number of people that can actually be there could be for sure controlled through the amount of parking that is there. But if you have two employees that share one car or one piece of equipment, or you have an employee that actually rides their bicycle or walks, probably to before I, we can limit what that looks like as the HOA. In the language, it identifies that the county has the basically say on what business can go in there compared to the residential. So before I answer that question, how does that look to you guys in terms of who's the, is it Eric who's the authority that we as the HOA say, hey, here's a client who wants to buy a unit, here's their business, and here's their use? Does that come in front of the council, or is it an internal office type scenario? What would your suggestion be there?
That would, I don't know, because I'm not the attorney who I'm casting glances at. that would maybe fall under that, I forget what it's called, the one that's going to moderate the subdivisions. Yes. I don't know. It seems like that would be an appropriate place for it. So it's not just Eric, but...
Brad, did you have that coming before the planning commission?
Yeah, it's set up to... you do what you do on your side with your HOA, but then when that person gets approval from them, they come before you, and you decide that use at that location. And of course, it can be appealed to the city council, but generally speaking, you would be the authority for any type of permitted use in that site, and then any other future site.
Yeah, and by my view, I'm kind of worried too much, right? Because I'm looking more as general, not just my project, but as the city. If I want to use a cannabis location in your city up top, then obviously the language is at least very city oriented. So the reason I ask the question is because I think it is wise that there is a cap in terms of saying, hey, no more than X amount of people within the space. I think language in there identified no more than two bedrooms. For my opinion, would you have a bedroom requirement?
No.
Okay. Where are we at? Pardon? Was it in your? There's a restriction on the number of units in other live work spaces, that number of bedrooms within or bedrooms and offices, which then again limits how many people can get in there. Every business is going to be different. So the way we anticipated the HOA is based upon the zone overlay. They submit their proposal of business. I met with a gentleman today that wants to do, he has a business up north. He wants to do a detailing, automotive detailing, where he'll have no more than two cars on site at any given time. Summit, there are no customers that come and park and wait. They drop a car off, they pick it up, and it's fully detailed. He now wants to provide living space for two of his employees when they come down here to do the work on the detail cars. So he is a business application. It will be an owner-occupied scenario, which I like the language there. But he will have employees, up to two employees. So I think if you identify maybe a maximum 2 to 4, or give yourself some flexibility in saying no more than 2 employees at any given time, with the discretion and approval of whoever approves that type of business. That's one of the reasons I asked that. We, the HOA, want to screen before they come to you, and then we'll present who that potential buyer client is for you then to say, yep, it does fall within our zoning, and why do the development agreement, either through that as an individual or as the HOA, will manage and oversee that. So that seems to be a clean system if you were to generalize it in another location.
So all this is going to happen before they begin to purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they'll put another contract subject to their approval through the HOA and approval of your regulation that you guys implement in the city. Now, the reason I ask for the process is because if you guys don't meet, you know, once a month, is there a committee that we go to pre-council member, or, you know, pre-council, or does it need to be approved through the council? So that's the only question that I really wanted to get answered. I should say the only question is your process, because we can streamline it very quickly. It's just how we can make it easier for you and expedite the buy.
Okay, Alan,
please.
Sorry, he brings up a good topic. I with having a committee like Brad having there, like the planning commission, but because we only meet twice a month and sometimes only once a month, this may be something that the ALUA could handle. Because the state seems to be under us, or on us a lot for getting developers and their clientele through the process faster. That's why they set up all these 15-day blocks that we need to jump hoops through to make sure that they're getting through the process faster. So I unless they think differently than this, I would think that to take the pressure off and give the developer the fair shake is maybe do this with the ALUA committee. You know, we set up a...
The ALUA committee meets whenever you meet.
Yeah.
Instead of...
Yeah. Which they can make that decision, you know, meet that day, make that decision, and then they can get on with it, whatever it is, whatever the recommendations are. And then the city council still would be the board that they would go to if they wanted to
appeal.
And parking is definitely the common denominator. And that's the beauty about the HOA, is we don't allow trailers to be parked outside for an extended period of time. We don't allow access cars to be parked out. You know, we can't park in a location that's not dedicated to that particular space. So parking is its own limiter. And then obviously, I would recommend that if you are going to put a limit in terms of the build out, you know, 2 bedrooms and a single office is going to limit how many people are going to actually be there. So we, the HOA, are going to enforce your rules and regulations well before you do, and well before you, and again, as part of the disclosure of their business, and this again can be general to whatever location you identify as zone, they have to, basically the buyer has to sign, this is the business, this is the use, this is how we're going to use it. We'll create a document, a templated document, so it's not customized to each individual. It's what is your intended use? How many employees do you identify being here? What's your stated use of business? Once they get that gets approved through a LUA, was that the right one? And the LUA has the template, the documents that support, yes, that is a permitted use, and you as the buyer agree to it. Give you an example, I have a project up north where living is not allowed. So we have everybody signed as a tenant and or an owner that they are not allowed to live in that space as a document. So therefore, then if the code enforcer comes in and says, hey, you got a tenant that's living in their space, we can say, well, here's the document,
we'll enforce it, we'll make sure they vacate. This will be just the opposite. They are using it for their intended use, and you as the city have approved to your commitment. Parking is going to be your common denominator on that for sure. So if that helps,
yeah.
Be a little bit of
this needs to happen with an approved use, but I've resisted. I've had personal experience with my business and approved use, but this needs to happen that way, and I wonder if an approved use might be more fairly administered through something like the ALUA.
I guess both the planning conditions, I thought that was place to go, but it can't be the ALUA. It doesn't matter. As long as there's an appeal to the planning commission. Say, for example, the ALUA denies a use and they want to appeal. And yeah, you can set up however you want to.
What do you think? The ALUA should be able to handle it in a more timely fashion.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense as like the first step. Then if they don't do the appeal, they run through.
And the good thing for us on the committee, so.
Well, as part of the development agreement, we can provide the report and provide the documentation. The ALUA provides the documentation and say, hey, here's the, again, generalizing the different areas, not just mine, but here's who apply, this is the type of uses, this is the type of businesses. You know, this is the business licensing that they're requesting within the city that is justifiable within that zone. And that can be part of the documentation as part of the HOA and the ALUA. So you've kind of got a almost like a three-step checks and balances, HOA, ALUA, and then council.
Okay. Further comment there? So I would be for doing something about a maximum of one employee other than the owner. Does parking seem like that's not going to be stepping on ourselves?
Well, the reason why we set up that way is because we're trying to kind of fit Blair in to something we don't know that's going to happen. Someone else could come along and have a full-scale development like this. And so he's living out of parking. And a new guy coming in, you could require, you know, 10 additional guest parking spaces. This won't be a problem. So I was just trying to fit some type of a middle ground here. But I do understand what you're talking about. I mean, someone doesn't have to have a car to actually work there.
And our next live-work may have larger, unless we limit it somehow, may have larger workspace with more parking that naturally comes with it. I don't know. We need
yeah,
to.
In the park plan, to answer, sorry, you know,
go ahead.
To jump into that, you can limit and say, listen, you know, you have to have enough parking to justify the amount of people that you can occupy the space. So if they have 10 parking spaces and they need 10 employees, they have to justify that through your setbacks, through your spacing, through your size of building, and that's more future use. But if you tie the parking to the amount of people that can be in the space, that's one way to do a checks and balances. But you also have to accommodate almost like up to and through approved use. If I have, you know, three, one of the potential users is an e-bike rental shop. And he's a local guy, and he's got a space in Hurricane, and another in Troy, I believe. Another one in St. George. And I said, listen, I don't think this is your space because you don't have parking. He said, but we never have more than three cars picking up a bike, and they don't park and ride their bikes away. He says, so I may need two or three employees shuffling bikes in and out, and they come in and check the bike. So there might be more employees there, but the parking will limit a certain amount. And then have your exception to your type of use may allow for additional employees that do not need parking.
Can you do this through maybe square footage of the building and
where you say so many employee parking stalls per whatever the square footage is? Because I feel like, in a sense, his development specifically, you have your two interior, your garage, plus right outside the garage. Pretty much in this vehicular access and parking section, it spells out pretty clearly for the parking, but I wonder if we can have like additional parking stalls required for employee based off square footage or somehow calculate it. Because I feel like the bigger the building, the more employees you're going to have. The smaller the building, less employees. So if we base it off square footage specific.
Maybe also depending on what kind of business, if it's a plumbing business and most of that is supplies stored in it, they would need fewer. Don't know.
It's hard, yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, I would recommend up to 2 employees and then based upon use and whether that's allowed or approved through the committee. Because if they say, hey, I need 10 employees, but you only have 2 parking stalls, then you're not, it's not going to be approved.
Richard.
Just an observation, I don't know that there's anything to do about it, but there are always more cars, even if there's 1 employee, and you'll find them parking on the streets. There's a street over in Hurricane that is just rows and rows of extra cars on both sides. But the question would be, most employees always have a significant other or a family. Is there any provision that we need to consider that says this is a single employee and if they live on site, what does a family do, or are they going to press the HOA? Do we have to consider that kind of thing? Because most employers are going to say, well, what do I do with my wife and child?
Well, as an employee, it's not, these aren't designed as we're housing your employees and your family. From my intention, right? It's a great comment. A future use for a different location, right? It's definitely, I'm going to provide housing for my employees and their family while they're working downstairs, their family works upstairs. That's not what we do as the HOA, but generalization, you're right.
Do you always limit it to 1 single building, or do some people sometimes come in and take 2 or 3 buildings and then use that to combine a business or gain more employees over parking?
I think in my project, we're going to see multiple. I think it's still, the rules apply to each unit, right? Just because you have 2 doesn't mean you get, 3 times. You have to comply with each individual unit regardless of how many you want to buy.
What is the square footage of your 1 unit?
Footprint is 1,800 square feet. Total usable is 4,500 square feet. Garage, mezzanine, second level, decks, and rooftop.
So if you went on your square footage requirement, you'd probably do a 1 parking spot for every 1,000 square feet, which would, in his case, would be about 4 employees.
But you only have 3 spots, right?
Well, he's got two interior and 2 exterior, and then 1 guest, right?
Well, we have 2 interior, 2 exterior.
And 1 share.
Plus 1.
All ADA potential.
And an ADA share. So essentially, you have 2 in the garage, 2 in front of the garage, 1 specific to the unit, and then 1 share of ADA. So technically, you have 2, 4, 5 defined for each unit, and then 1 share of HOA per every per 2 units.
Seems pretty good. Yes. Well, I think it would be incumbent upon the provider of the property as to how they're going to deal with that interior garage unit. I mean, if they only have 1 employee, then they can convert that into actual manufacturing area. If not, then they may have to use that for their own parking requirements.
Correct. But the limitation is still square footage for parking allows for so many.
Yeah.
So if they chew up their interior parking by building it out, then that limits them and actually controls kind of what we're all talking about, how many people can actually be in.
So that, and I don't know
do you restrict the employees, because when you just control it by how many parking stalls they have, they can choose how many employees they need based off the unit of the general pattern.
Well, I thought was if you did the one per thousand, which is kind of a manufacturing parking requirement anyway, you'd have, in his case, you'd have four a house, so to speak. But then it would require the person that owns this property to decide whether those two interiors, based on employees, are going to be usable for manufacturing, or they have to stay parking.
I don't think that if you don't limit the number of employees, they're going to find places to park somewhere. You're going to have that street in front of the school full of cars. And if there's no limit and there's 10 employees working in there, you're going to have cars everywhere.
But that's a public street, so they would be able to park there anyway.
Well, it's a statement.
I mean, you know, because all the school, when they operate, they park up and down that road too.
It's a statement.
The only way you control that is you put up a sign on the other side of the road, like they got on one. You can't park 7 to 4, whatever it is.
Well, you can, I mean, if you both of these go to light limits, if you say one employee per 1,000 square feet, subject to approval of the type of business. So they have to tell us how many employees are going to be on site. It has to be approved through your approval committee. So then when the HOA says, hey, there's more cars, there's more people, here's what you agreed to and signed, you're just like...
The only problem I have with that is they're coming in, a lot of these people might be just starting a business. And then what happens when they grow and they need more employees?
They move.
That's one thing, but if it's just a couple employees, they make it work, but they can.
Yeah. And that's going to happen no matter what we
do. Yes.
What ends up happening, for sure.
Are we more comfortable with one employee per 1,000 square feet?
Yeah, I think that sounds better.
I think so, too.
So what changes to say a maximum of one employee per 1,000 square feet?
So, if I move past comments you have, stop us, so we're going in an order. The next question I have is number F. A 2-foot by 3-foot sign is allowed for each unit indicating the name of the business and hours of operation. Is that a minimum or maximum or both? So that,
above the door or something, maybe?
Yeah, it's trying to be more modern than that.
So 2x3 is a maximum for them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you see a big sign out in front representing all the businesses, or just visible sign above the door? It was a question I actually had tonight. Was we have the corner by the light, we're centered in state. You can put a monument there that just has kind of each business that's labeled. And that was my first question, is can I? I don't know if I want to, I just want to know if it's allowed. Second is when we have end units. 2x3 in the front, can I do up to 2 signs, one in front of their unit and one on the side if it's an end unit. I like the 2x3, I don't want to make 4x8 billboard on an end unit. And so that was more of a question and how you guys would want to see that.
Here's the question that I have, and I was going to have Brad working on this, is because I would prefer, it's either come down to where we have a preference of how signs can be in a particular zone, or we put all of the possibilities in our current sign ordinance, so it's applicable across the board, because right now, if we allow, and I like how Brad has it now, I think that's about the right size of signage to go above the building. But our current ordinance would allow you to put that type of signage out on the corner. Now, on the building, seeing that's going to be the thing is this would probably override as far as what was on the building, this ordinance would override the sign ordinance, because they're allowed to take up so much area on the sides of the building.
that's, I guess that's where the question is, and that's what I'm going to have you look at, is do we do a sign specific for the zone, or do we try to get everything into something sign ordinance so that we don't have to flip back and forth on that? So
it seems like this zone should be its own beast because we're going to have so much density of businesses there. Mm-hmm. His monument would be busy.
Yeah, I could have 38, right? If I had 38 businesses in there, which everybody has to have a business license, it's just some people are going to want to advertise their businesses, some people don't need to advertise at all. You know, they're online, dropship, or you know, they don't need drive-by traffic.
Because you could see on the corner, like a 3 or 4 foot high area, you know, and it would be wide. It would have individual units listed. You know, but I think there's something that
clearly
is important as far as
the one on the building. No one had ever seen
it. Yeah, I think what Brad has is great for even generalization. And then, if, let's say something goes up on top and they want to live work zone, they look at the sign ordinance and says, hey, we're going to live work zone, this is what we're moving to with our signage. And it could be monument description, it might be 1 foot by 2 feet, you know, or you know, like a linear signage that has multiple businesses in a 4 foot sign, and then on the business itself or on the building itself, interior units have 1 2x3, end units have the option to do 2 signs 2x3, one on the visible side and one on the front of the building. I think that might be a good compromise.
What I've seen with these is like on the corner you're talking about, you have a monument sign that says Larry's Commercial Sign, and that's all that would say. When you drive in, you've got a kiosk kind of list each unit and what that business is, and that way you know it's not in that facility. But I think if you try to list, you said, cover those 38 businesses on a corner.
I don't want to ever see them.
They get lost. It almost be better to market that out and have a few on the corner that are paid monthly or 6 months for you on your side.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, generalization, whatever your sign ordinance you want.
Yeah,
sure. When I visit the project, I.
You know, kind of monument. It's got each individual location within that. Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the result for sure. But I think one up front, one on the side of the main unit, the 2x3 maximum, I think is a brilliant idea. Subtle and professional.
Comments?
Can we also have it stated clearly on here that it has to be on the unit? Because right now it's just a 2x3 sign. I think it would be nice, especially because they fill up the majority of the, it's going to be a lot of parking lots, not a lot of landscape space. And this is more thinking of letters, but maybe other units would be different, but I think on the building is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Number G says live work units must be owner occupied. Are we okay with that, or are we going to let an employee live there if the owner isn't?
We all have the same. I have the same question to you. So that's good. So there's owner occupied. There's a primary residence, and there's a secondary residence.
I guess I see that maybe a little differently. As owner occupied is. The business there is the owner, the one who owns the building, owns the business, runs the business, and isn't subleasing out to another business. Whether or not there's employees there or not, employees are working for the business, so that would still be an owner-occupied because the business is owning and running it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Actually, that's really good language. That the owner of the business owns the building. So he may not personally live there, but he owns the building and owns. So I don't know how that.
Thank you.
What you just said, say that again.
I don't know.
No,
I don't.
But
so we need to find language so that the owner of the business doesn't put his son-in-law on the weekends there. So that it is owner or employee.
Just so I understand. Because I set this up so that an owner, for example, would want to start a business.
envision it as like a guy coming in and buying five of them and then putting his employees in there and not putting them on the site. I didn't think that's what the council wanted for the planning commission. So you need to know what you want in that regard. And maybe changes have to be made.
Comments?
I think either way, depending on which way you want to go, I just sharing how I would come in and look at the owner-occupied, not necessarily the owner of the business that's living there, unless you're separating the business from the residential.
I have thought I was doing the right thing enough times in this job and then had unforeseen consequences happen. So I'd be okay with that owner's one employee being there, but we need to word it so that it isn't something else. And or comments, do we think it should just be an owner?
Well, what if it's the manager who's living there?
Yeah, are we okay with that?
It's hard because I feel like there's a lot more when you're the owner of the business and living there. Or instead of a manager or an employee, there's a lot more control of what's going on. I know we have noise ordinances and everything else where the police can get involved, but enforcement-wise, I feel like whether it's owner-occupied, but maybe we still allow for another employee to, as long as it's still owner-occupied, are we okay with another employee to be living there as well? Because in some of these situations, you may have bigger livable, like it's up to 700 square feet of livable space.
Minimum.
So I mean, there's the possibility of more space, as long as the owner of the business is occupying it. Can there be additional employees? I think the owner of the business needs to live there.
Okay.
I feel like it's has to be treated more like this incubator idea. But I'm wondering if I don't know how the city council feel, but I feel like there could be potential to also have an employee.
Well, I think if you just say owner occupied, separately, so it would have to be reworded. Take out any ambiguity.
All of our discussions have been in the past have been the fact that we're opening up to the business owner making it so that he possibly is not having to pay rent and a lease at the same time. But also that it was for his manager, their manager, or employees, because sometimes you don't pay the employee enough, but if you're able to give them a living location, that would solve a lot of additional expenditures.
Yes.
Would probably be the key point. So I personally would like, I think in the discussions we've had, I'd like to open them more. I don't necessarily think that I'd be strict enough. My personal opinion, if the owner was there, I mean, it would make sense if they're trying to really make a go of this. But I think the part of the bonus for these types of units are to have the manager and an employee or so be able to live there and make it that they can maintain those employees throughout the business life. We've already set the amount through the size of the building, right? As far as how many employees they have lived there or that would occupy that potential building. So at that point, it's when they would have to basically, if they got too big, which would be great for them, they could move out. Maybe they find some other place in the work and become a bigger business. So I think we'd be doing an injustice to the limit. That I think we need to be a little bit more open to. I really think we just let the size of the building dictate the amount, but I think it's got to be put in a way that we're just not letting anybody outside the business. They've got to be part of the operation, part of that business. You know, if he's a detail guy, the people that do the detail are the ones that have the ability to live there. It's not like their friends and their relatives. And
you have to be employed by the business, ownership of the building.
The HOA.
Yeah.
So as I read that G, it doesn't, the way it's written, it says it must be owner-occupied. It doesn't exclude owner and someone else. And maybe that's okay. Maybe we leave it like it is.
I guess coming from a banking industry, owner-occupied, like an SBA loan, is the actual business has to be in that building. They can't rent it out. And so I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from. It's looking more on the business side. It has to be owner-occupied by the business, the one who's pulling the license. You could state employee housing separately, which might be a good idea to keep it owner-occupied and then state employee housing separately if we want to allow it.
Isn't that also going to go through the application process too? They're going to identify who's going to be living there, what their status is. You know.
Yeah, as part of that, as part of that application, they're going to define exactly who is there, how the business is going to operate. We could have them sign an affidavit, obviously, once it's approved.
Well, and could they also change that on occasion if, you know, one employee leaves, certainly, you know, they're going to identify who's in the building or something like that.
Yeah, and that's easy to do. Like, with HOAs, it's kind of like if you want extra landscaping on the house, and then in HOA, you have to approve through HOA to make the adjustments or changes. You do the same thing. And you can do the same thing as council. Any change in the affidavit from the original intended use needs to go back through the approval process. So, therefore, the manager doesn't need to come in because the owner is now expanded out. But I think you're right to have that be a little bit more open. Open in terms of the use, but the owner of the business, like now, like you're talking about, like an SBA loan, it is the owner of the business has to qualify for that property.
What if we change to say the work unit must be owner occupied or employee occupied?
I think you're confusing it with the business part and the residential part.
So you're saying.
I think you kind of combine the both, and it. So then, I don't know.
Well, you could say, like Brad was to expand that, you could say, you know, any occupancy of the unit has to be a owner and or employee of that business. And maybe that could be a little bit more definition.
That's what I was trying to get at. So I think my concern with this one was is that, you know, you don't want somebody just renting it out, some guy just has nothing to do with business. So there has to be some connection to that business.
Okay. I think so.
So like business owner occupied, or like you're saying, you could have someone that owns the building but doesn't run the business or own the business. Business could be leasing from them. You don't want that owner of the building to be occupying. You want to be business.
I mean, we do have the requirement they can't sublet it or sublease it, so that's
in
there too.
I think that's what you're kind of thinking, if I was understanding that. So business owner occupied or employee occupied.
Is that okay?
That sounds good. So section 1.2, permitted and prohibited uses, the last sentence, all approved uses are subject to conditions to ensure compatibility with the surrounding businesses and development, I guess it's two sentences. Violation of the conditions of the approval can result in permit revocation. If someone owns this and has bought it and has their business permit revoked, are we going to not allow them to live there any longer? I'm not sure how the legalities of that would work out. It seems like we're marrying ourselves to them, and we can't really revoke their business license and kick them out of the unit, not allow them to live in the unit that they own. And I'm not sure what to do about that. I'm not sure where the teeth is to enforce it if that happens.
My experience in the HOA is your first teeth, right? And then there's the code compliance. Do you have a code compliance officer in the city at all?
Not on purpose.
I'm on stop shop. And so, in other municipalities, is the HOA is responsible for code compliance. Code compliance officer then can issue fines. So yes, you would not be able to kick them out of the something that they've purchased. But if they aren't complying with their signed affidavit and their approved use, then there's a fine structure that really states. No different than HOA for the lien on your property.
Okay.
See, what you're doing from my perspective is you're issuing a permit for the business use. You're not issuing a permit for occupancy. So I see it as two different things.
So if they lose the permit for business use,
and are living there, they're still going to be living there.
It's a residence, yeah.
Okay.
So you're revoking, if you have to revoke, well, you're going to be revoking the business portion.
And A under that is use finding. Do you mind explaining that? Because I've read it twice. What is a use finding?
Well, you call it a similar use finding, or whatever you want to call it. What purpose of this was again, because you're not having a list of permitted uses. The planning commission set up there, but the ALUA can find that a use is appropriate in the zone. That's basically all the same.
Okay.
And go forward with the business.
So I like that 10 units per acre. That should protect us from this being too compact. I'm on the next to last page on F. It says a 6-foot high decorative rock wall shall be required to surround the perimeter of the property. There. Doesn't our code require 8 feet between commercial and residential?
It's unless an existing 6-foot block wall is already there. So there is an exception. The reason we put that in there is we have a lot of businesses that were coming in and they were trying to add. So on top of the 6-foot, so when you go to 8 feet, that you have to include structural engineering. The footings, widths, depths, rebar becomes different. And we started having walls fell because it wasn't built for an 8-foot wall. So we felt rather than making them tear it down and rebuilding it, that we put the exception. So if there's an existing 6-foot wall there now, then that's good. If there's not a wall there, then we have to have an 8-foot wall.
Okay. Can we change the language to reflect that?
Just reflect. Or an 8-foot wall?
Yeah, that's what our ordinance requires between commercial and residential already.
Unless there's a 6-foot wall. Yeah, there's an existing foot. Mr. Howard will actually have this issue right now with the by the house springs. Sell the property by one of the relatives. The 8-foot wall up there from the springs. Mr. Howard put a 6-foot wall that already ran east-west. And then the ones that are going to put the hotel have to put another 8-foot wall on the west side of the property. So that right now they're legal. That 6-foot wall.
So what I have is legal and complies with your fence.
Yeah, because it's already existing and it's at least 6-foot.
But any new project would require an 8-foot
wall. It wasn't there.
This one didn't.
Yeah. Okay. So
maybe only if it abuts residential. Maybe if it's commercial on both sides, nobody cares.
But the problem is with this zone, you're going to have residential.
Yes, we are.
That's why my thought was you have to have something, because people will be living there. So
I can see that.
The wall. A new development should have some type of wall around.
Oh, yeah.
Papers.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that regardless, there's not an existing wall that's going to be equal.
So pretty much it should be block wall, all new developments requiring an 8-foot unless an existing 6-foot block wall is already there.
Or we take it out, or we can
say 6-foot. I just want to make sure we're clear. I feel like there's a couple of things going through.
Well, we can take that out and just defer to our code because we would be checking against the code anyway.
Yeah, I think you can refer to the code. That would be the easier way.
Yeah, because the code are specific to that anyway.
Which code are you talking about?
Our city code, just our regular city code. When it talks about commercial versus residential.
So just get rid of it?
I think I personally would just refer to the code. But I just hate, you know, if we can keep referring back to the code or not referring back to it, we don't have to repeat it through the ordinance, it makes it a little bit simpler.
Does it make it messy to actually show that? have the block wall section there, but have it reference the city code?
No, yeah.
Because I feel like when it comes to the development standpoint or the design side, it's very helpful to have that information right there. Then there's no, well, you didn't look at the city code properly. There's a lot of loops to, or hoops to jump through.
We're doing that now with our construction standards. All the bombings back in, we're referring back to the code reference, to taking the language out.
Okay.
I'll just find that section of the code and then put that in.
So back up to residences, we're just above that. Where it says square footage should be 700 square feet, right? But there's nothing on the size of the business. Do we need to have something on the minimum business standard, a certain percentage of the building or something? And so they don't just have this tiny little business and everything else is residential. No, I like the residence of 700, but there's nothing on the commercial side. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
there was a commercial requirement under their current commercial zone. There's
a requirement, but I think what he's asking is there should be a minimum square footage
for the commercial portion of it.
Business.
Yeah, whether it's a certain percentage of the building or
a multiplier percentage. Some way of saying if your residential space is this big, you must have at least this much business.
Or if your whole square footage
is vice versa.
Well, in like his case, some of it could be made into garage space.
I mean, because really, we want, really the main justice is for the commercial.
This is commercial, yeah.
And this is secondary to that. So I like the percentage better, you know, 75%, I'm throwing this out, 75% commercial, 25% residential, you know. Coming up, instead of getting to specifics, you don't know what the size of the buildings are going to be. They're going to be all over the board.
Yeah.
You know, so if we come up with a specific percentage, I think that would be better.
Like, for instance, mine, I've got 1,800 square feet of footprint that could be all identified as commercial. I've got 330 square feet of mezzanine, which could be identified as your business commercial, could be an upper office. And then you have another 1,500 to 1,700 square feet. But I'm just trying to do math on what percentage that would be. And then obviously you have a roof and a deck that is square footage, using that square footage.
Well, more than 50% business.
Yeah, I was maybe it's a 50-50. No more, or no less than,
or
50% is to be used for residential.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. You can take the residential and just divide it by percentage of the building, too.
Yeah.
You would have to do the commercial part just in the residential.
Yeah, because I think the commercial part is there, but yeah.
Or do you just do a ground floor, first floor?
So my only argument with that, not argument, the only discussion with that is what if you have an attorney that
uses
an office up in his...
Yeah.
So it might be better to do a percentage of a minimum. You have to have at least 50% of your building has to be a commercial...
I like that.
That might be an office, that might be a garage, that might be...
I like that as long as we can specify in the resident space that it cannot be on the main floor.
Yeah.
The purpose of this is to have a business, not to turn it into residence. I want to make sure the residence portion cannot be on the main floor.
That's a perfect one. You know, say George has it like 100% down on the main floor, and then some of them actually have a 50-50 on the second floor, and then you get to the third floor, and it all becomes residential. You know, because they're trying to maintain that commercial, and you know, growth up through there. Because really, that's where the money's coming from. It's not from residential. Mm-hmm. Residential is a losing concept for the city. You know, the taxes are all through. Unless you want to raise your property taxes, then it's got to be different.
So you said at minimum of 50% of the building shall be for business use. Yeah. You said something else.
Just have it spelled out very clearly that the main floor cannot be used for residence.
The main floor has to be
commercial, yeah. Residence has to be.
When you say main floor, you're talking about ground floor.
Ground floor, yeah.
My final nitpick, and I'm not a builder's. We have 4-yard dumpster per 20 units, a minimum. That seems not much, especially if they're a business. Yeah, business and putting their packaging. And I have a 2-yard dumpster at my business, and it fills every week. We're trashy in my business. But I don't know anything about businesses and dumpsters.
I mean, we do whatever you want. I just do that
anyway. So I think from a commercial standpoint, we had to do it. Without your commercial zone, you got to do it for dumpster sites. If the liquid zone is in there, what about the trash cans? Because within the HOA, you have an individual trash can that has to be inside the garage. Same thing, the trash can comes out.
Going to haul those out by the dumpster?
Well, it's to the front of the unit, right? So
are we going to be able to get the garbage truck?
We'll have to call them. We'll call the dumpster people, because their option is, like you see, they put them out on SR9, or they would have to take them out to Center Street. I'm not sure the truck would come through. Let's make a call for the solid waste and see what our options are there. Because I know the ones on SR9 are pretty bad, because I know there's a lot of people that see how fast they can hit those trash cans.
Would the county provide the trash can? Because the county's the one that provides it too, right? Would they provide it?
The trash can itself?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I'm not sure. Like, in all of our multiple family dwelling units, they provide a trash can for each unit, which I just think what you're trying to do is all those are fronted off of the main road, right? So. Or the trash can, like I know the ones down by in Spanish Gardens, that 7-plex that we approved, they have to wheel theirs out onto the road, because the trash truck doesn't want to pull in to a dead end area and then have to back up.
Well, we've got the loop, which is nice.
Yeah, and that's the thing we need to make for you right there, is you can loop through. I just think we need to find out what they're allowing us to do, and then.
I guess it'd be nice if, like most apartment complexes or multifamily, some of them have the individual garbages, some have dumpsters.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice in live work to not have individuals. I lived in townhomes, and it just doesn't look nice, and it's hard to enforce where they go, even though it might be something enforceable. It would be nice to almost force dumpsters in the live work so that it stays confined within the space.
Well, then would you take it from 4 to maybe a 6-yard dumpster?
And unless you guys have some different idea, I feel like it would be much better and be more feasible with dumpsters.
You also want to contract that the dumpsters are getting cycled more often. Instead of once a week, it might be 3 times a week.
Yeah, that would solve the problem.
I don't want personal gas or trash cans either. It's just...
Well, it just makes it hard because you're already limited on parking a lot of times with these types of developments. Then you're throwing dumpsters or garbage cans in front.
Yeah, I would rather an HOA contract have the electric pole. Because we, the HOA, can increase our HOA fees because they're recycling more often. Yeah. So they charge us, $100 or $500 a week, if we need 3 times a week, then we just distribute that amongst the entire development.
That's a better solution.
I mean, that feels contrary to what you're trying to do. You don't want to see that cluster.
I think it'd look better as dumpsters.
Yeah. So Derek's going to call tomorrow with the trash. And then he'll let me know what I'll put in here.
Way back when I lived in the basement of mine, they required me to have both trash can and dumpster. Either one would have been fine for what I was doing, but the solid waste people required me to have both. Hopefully that's changed.
I think that has changed, because I think in smaller areas where they can't get their trucks down into, having simple dumpsters is better than having to pick up multiple cans. I mean, some people take them full block away, or like half a block away. That's kind of crappy too.
That's all I have for the comment. I really like this. Thank you, Brad. I think it does what we were hoping for.
Well, I have actually one more question. Is the enclosed up? So when you say enclosed, take mine in particular. So So on my second levels, instead of doing wrought, my plan was to do wrought iron railing on the interior. But it is, do those need to be enclosed with this?
Weren't we just talking about the exterior?
Yeah, and that was actually going to be one I was going to bring up. Because I was the one that originally brought it up. I felt like it, the exterior facing residential and out, you know, the other, the church specifically was the unit we looked at. I really like the enclosed fence slash railing because it gave a little bit more privacy to the residents, which I feel is necessary. But I think anything that's interior or facing itself, I think open railing would be fine if we can call it out in a way. I just think it's nice to give that extra privacy. You know you're going to be by residents, might as well put it in the code.
Well, even with our increased setbacks on residents.
Mm-hmm. I just think it helps to just...
It was nice for that church, wasn't it? I mean, when we got up there, we could smell the food before slosh, right?
I was going to say, Derek only saw the food because he looked over and tried to smell it. So, I really like that.
I'm happy to do either one. I mean, prefer that the railing, because it's a really fun work on the interior or the weight. But anything outside that's facing, that's what we call just a different property.
Yeah.
Should be close. So anything along the SR9, we'll do is solid. And then anything along the
outsides of it.
The outside of Center Street is solid. Anything on the inside we'll do is regular.
Okay. That's my thought. I think at least have it called out any residential or probably should be anything exterior.
That will keep our tourists from seeing the barbecues and stuff too. I like that.
I was going to ask, do we need to have something spelled out? Because we've had this concern before with residents and stuff on the balcony hanging off the wrought iron. Or do we need to call out something on the balcony that if it is a wrought iron, that there's certain requirements that they can't have banners or, you know, I don't know how to word it, but.
If you can go up to the outdoor storage, it says additional balcony shall be used for storage.
Okay, so it's in the outdoor storage section.
Fine, right.
Is that okay?
Yes. Further comment?
No, that might be fine. You guys covered everything. It's great. It's written very well. I'm excited to.
The only other comment maybe would be on prohibited, like microbreweries or vape shops where there are residences. I don't know if a microbrewery would be able to get a license. I don't know enough on that. But
too close to
the
school.
Too close to the school. Well, I'm thinking of other areas as well. Where there's residences, is that prohibited? Do we want it? Vape shops might get more customers, but if they have more parking, would it be good? I don't know. It's just a... Where you got residences right above it.
So you want to prohibit like microbrewers?
Yeah. I don't know if they get it. I don't know if they get a liquor license, or maybe, I don't know.
Completely up to you guys. You want to prohibit those ones?
I was just trying to think. I didn't know if it'd even be able to get a license, whether there's residences there, or it's other schools, or what. What the requirements are for that to begin with.
600 feet at school, it has traffic, that was a crowbarized.
Well, I mean, maybe as a generalization, do you want a live work to have that type of business and a live work even if it's outside of where I am? But I think that's where some of the approvals of type of businesses within that this particular zone can be processed. Like, for instance, you have gym as a prohibited use. Well, I think there is going to be someone that comes in and probably may want to do like a personal training one-on-one facility. So that gym might not be approved as a generic public, but through their affidavits, through their application, they say we're only going to have one client in here at any given time. And it's just, so is that now approved as a personal training facility instead of gym? Microbreweries, vape shops, all those different types of uses would have their limitations based upon how they apply to intended use within that space. And maybe that's...
See, a personal trainer, I think, would be different than gym, just in my own perspective. Yeah. I mean, I like the gym being prohibited because of the parking.
I agree. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, but if someone came in, like what you said with that, and they define themselves differently, then I think
But if you have specific uses you don't want next to a neighbor, then that would be good. That's a real question.
See, how about you put the restaurants can't be in here? So if you want to put like microbreweries, that's kind of in line.
Well, what if they don't have a retail portion? They just make it and ship it or whatnot. You know what I mean?
Then that would be okay.
So I'm just wondering.
Depends on how much odor they.
That's true.
Sometimes breweries are stinky places.
Well, in my particular one, it's not going to work because of parking. I mean, if they're just distributing and they're not operating as a restaurant, then that's different, right? It might be just UPS trucks coming.
Yeah, if they're not manufacturing.
So therefore, and your ordinances with noise, with smell, with obnoxious odors, if you want to call it that, that correlates to whether it's residential or commercial. They still have to comply. I mean, I barbecue and hopefully my neighbors are white.
You're offending vegans everywhere.
Part of the barbecuing vegetables.
Now, part of the use finding process was that you can't have dust, heat, noise, glare, noxious fumes, odor, vibration, those kind of things. So the rule would be evaluating all that in the choice. And I'm sure you would too.
Of course, yes, each way.
Yeah.
Okay. Further comment? With your permission, we'll table item number 2 for another night.
I have one question. Can you just shoot it down before you close? Sorry.
Go ahead.
Tyson's been after me for 2 years to send this new format out, which we did. Do you guys like it? Did it help? My first time at it, I got my new girl. Was that what you were looking for?
Yeah.
Did it help you guys at all? I mean, pictures, additional pictures, the description, the staff's recommendations? I don't know if it was new one.
Yes.
Yes.
I didn't realize that it was new and wonderful, but
Tyson's been trying to work with me for 2 years. I'm old, I'm willing to change, but it takes time. I see the benefit in it because if I give you more information now, our thoughts, our processes, giving you pictures, more pictures of where actual location is, and things like that, I think it gives you guys more of a chance to understand where we're going with it.
So I asked Eric quite a while ago, and I hope I didn't offend him, because I enjoy what he does right now, but when I go to Hurricane City planning commission meetings or so forth, like, we're not sitting with these developers and these people. Eric is, Kyle, whoever's sitting down with them, and they know the code way better than we do. And so, like, in Hurricane City, when we submit an application, and we go and sit before, like we go to planning commission, they have staff comments the staff recommends this for approval with the planning commission. It's a very similar process, and then it shows their findings for why, and it gives all the different codes, so it just helps us to be able to see the reason that they're coming up with, and it just makes it an easier process, so it's not us starting from scratch, we have something to go on to. So.
You want to know, in California, that's the way it's done.
Right, really
in Utah, there are very few cities and towns that do findings and they have a staff recommendation. So I think it's just more of a cultural thing for Utah as opposed to like what you're talking about now.
I really liked it. I think it's very helpful for everyone. It kind of gives the applicant a pretty good idea of how things are going to go. Not that it's going to be dictated by the staff, but it allows them to see, well, we don't need a lot of the code already. And those are things that I feel is really beneficial to be able to see up front.
Well, I've seen the vision of it, but I'm old and it takes me a long time to grasp all the things down. So there's only
that's all right.
But hey, so hopefully, if you want to see anything different, if I'm not, it's going to take me a couple months to get where I want. But if you want to see anything different, it's helped you. And going through what we presented, call me, let me know. Because I think the more, like Tyson said, the more the better, right? The more information, the more understanding, the more code references we can get to, the better that you're going to have before you come to the meeting.
And it's not that I don't love city code and how rude, but
yeah,
sometimes it's nice to have some additional background on it. So.
Okay.
Item G would be to adjourn. Any opposed?
No.
No. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, I think over time, too, the use function is going to be, you know, certain things. We see that that's not